When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to another wonderful episode of THN on the Queue, where we bring you all the news, notes, and wild speculation from all around the queue over the last 7 days. You know me, I'm Will McLaren. You know that guy, he's Jamie Tozer, but you might not know the guy on the bottom of your screen. And if you're not watching this, then you might not know the third voice that's about to come into the picture. This is a guy who probably needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. He is a legend in Nova Scotia broadcasting circles with Eastlink TV and their Friday night hockey broadcast. And before that, he was one of the best young prospects of the mid-90s in within a couple block radius of Cole Harbour Place. He's seen it all. He's done it all. And he can attest that the hot dogs in Rouyn-Noranda are the best in the league. Logan Delaney, thank you for joining us on THN on the Queue.
Well, that was the nicest intro anyone's ever said about me, albeit it's false, but I'm quite flattered. Thanks for having me, guys. This is going to be a lot of fun.
No, it's going to be great. And thank you for taking the time, Logan, to join us. So all three of us are coming to you from within about a, I'm going to say, 15-minute radius. We promised not to make this as Halifax-centric as last week. However, it's going to be pretty hard not to mention them, if only because they are one of the top three teams in the league. And quite frankly, the top three teams in the league look like they are virtually unbeatable. And that's only because they have been over the last week, two, in the case of Halifax, the better part of 2023. Three teams have combined for points in 30 straight games. Halifax is on a 19-game heater right now. They're 17-0-2 over that stretch. Quebec has points in eight straight at 6-0-1-1, and Sherbrooke has won their last three games. So I guess my question for both of you, and we'll start with Logan on this one. It's not uncommon to have, obviously, the top teams rise to the top, especially post-trade deadline, once everybody has their roster moves in place. But it's not very often we see three teams go on substantial, or in the case of Sherbrooke, tidy little runs, like what we're seeing. And, of course, Halifax and Quebec have had to go through each other over the course of this streak and have kept their streaks intact. From what you've seen of these three teams, what do you think will separate the eventual playoff champion if it's one of these three teams? And for that matter, if you think it's Gatineau or Victor or somebody else, throw in your two cents there.
Well, you know, junior hockey is one of the things that makes junior hockey so great is, honestly, on any given night, anybody can beat anybody, right? You have a bad game and that's it. I'm a firm believer the best team never wins. The team that's playing the best does. And that's what it's going to come down to going down the stretch. Now, I'll say this. I think a lot of these teams, where they load up and they're loading up halfway through the year, you know, it affects team dynamic a bit. And what we're seeing a lot now in major junior hockey is sometimes egos get in the way. And, you know, these teams, I mean, they've loaded up. I mean, there's a lot of firepower up front on a few of these teams in the league. And I sit there and I wonder, I'm like, I look at a guy, you know, that was in the spotlight, you know, getting double shifted, playing 2 minutes straight in a power play in the first half of the year. Well, all of a sudden after the trade deadline, it's not like that anymore. Is he going to be able to deal with that, you know, moving forward down the playoffs, right? And that's a big component. You know, I think the teams are going to be successful, the ones that figure it out. And the other thing too, I think the team that's going to really win it this year is a team that's going to utilize its depth. You know, some of these teams, we're only seeing them ride the top six guys, the top three or four D. And I'm telling you, come playoffs, it's a grind, man, especially you're going 6-7 game series. If you're not utilizing your depth, it will kill you come the third round. And, you know, not to ramble, but one thing when I was watching Quebec play here in Halifax a couple weeks ago, that was a big game, you know, 1-2 and all that jazz. Quebec really utilized their depth. Halifax, not so much. So, I mean, that could be a precursor of things to come.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a situation, too, in Quebec where, and they're not alone in this from this standpoint, but, you know, one of the bigger names amongst the contending teams that is not in the lineup right now is Evan Nass. Obviously, he's been in that lineup. He's been injured twice this year. He wasn't in playing in that game in Halifax, but despite that, you're right, Logan. All three of us were actually at that game. You did see Patrick Waugh, who we'll be talking about a little bit more in a few moments, use his depth to his advantage. So when a guy like Nass comes back, you know, it only improves that dynamic, you would like to think. So, Jamie, from your standpoint, you talk about the depth, you talk about, who's going to be the hottest team going in. Obviously, the guy behind the bench can play as big of a factor as well. What do you see coming out of these top five down the stretch and into the playoffs?
Yeah, I definitely agree on the depth part. And that's what, kind of makes Quebec such a dangerous team. And one of the more interesting teams too, because there's no Bedard, there's no Stankov, and there's no Dume on Quebec. There's just kind of they've got some star power, but not that A plus star power that a lot of other teams have. But they're just so deep, and we've seen that from Quebec teams in the past. And obviously, that's what Patrick Waugh really seems to like and focus on. And I think that sets them up well for success heading into the playoffs. And I think the big question for them and for Waugh, like we're going to talk about later. Is can they kind of get over that hump? And I do wonder a little bit if they do have enough firepower to kind of get past the third round, but they're just so deep. Halifax, I almost worry a little bit. Logan, I'm curious what you think about this. Are they almost peaking a little bit too early? They're playing, unbelievable right now. But we've seen some really good teams in recent years go on these streaks after the trade deadline. And then kind of struggle going into the playoffs and then kind of struggle in the first two rounds as well. So what do you think that the Mooseheads might be peaking a little bit too early?
Do we have 10 minutes for this? Because I could go on for a while. About this. you know what? I'm going to be very honest. And working with the Mooseheads and calling their games and stuff, sometimes I'm the first one to throw them under the bus. And I'll say this. Their record in this 19 games consecutive point streak. Firstly, it is incredible to me how the team in 2013 did not have a streak this long. I can't believe that this team is doing that. And that team in 2013 never did because they only lost six games that year. However, that being that, I believe the Halifax is not even playing their best hockey right now. And they haven't lately at all. And, you look at the roster, on paper, you really look at it and it's like, wow, like this is a really damn good hockey team. I mean, they went out, you know what, junior hockey, it's not rocket science. If you want to be good in junior hockey, you need two things to start with. You need good Euros and you need good 20s. Halifax only started the season with two 20s, which is crazy to me, but look at what they did. They went out and got Lawrence and Doucette, arguably the two best in the league. I mean, that right there puts you to another level. And besides those two guys, they were pretty good to begin with. And a lot of these players, I don't think we might even be giving them enough credit, which I know that sounds a little crazy, but, bear with me. We kind of don't. And I was having this conversation with a friend of mine the other day, really knowledgeable hockey guy. I respect his opinion a lot. And he actually laughed. He said to me, he goes, you know what? I think it's time we start realizing like, wow, this is a really good team. But to say, I don't think they've been playing their best hockey. I think right now Halifax has a real big problem of playing down to another team's level. I've seen them elevate their game against the best and I've seen them really, really play down. And, they're going to have to figure that out because this side conference isn't as strong as the other side, right? So, come playoffs, hey, Moncton's a very well-coached team. They play hard, they compete, very well-structured. Halifax doesn't play their best and runs into them first round. Who knows what could happen in six or seven games, right?
And right. Will, I'll just add one more thing. I think that conference set up such an important note because you look at Halifax's remaining schedule compared to Quebec's and Sherbrooke's, and it's quite a bit easier. So I do wonder, just how battle tested are they going to be heading into some of the big teams that they might face in the second or third round?
It's a curse and a blessing, really. Yeah. I mean, the fact that they're kind of getting the best of both worlds. They get to focus on the Maritime Division, which, let's be honest with you, it's the weakest division amongst the four, really. They can beat any of the other five teams any given night, and really they should. Now, Moncton will give them a hard test. They're a hardworking team, but the other three, those should be winnable games, and with no disrespect to the two, Charlottetown, Bathurst, or St. John, or Cape Breton. So they're going to use
In fairness, Charlottetown spent a lot of time beating up on other people the past 2 years. So, you know.
Exactly. And there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a hefty bill to pay there. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're going to have the benefit of staying within their own division, but also use that to their advantage that, you know, with Quebec and that tougher schedule, they could still eclipse them for the conference lead. Mm-hmm. And just make that road all the more easier for them come playoff time. Sitting here right now, we probably don't expect the Mooseheads to have a really tough, challenging opponent, possibly until round three. Obviously, assuming they get that far. So see how they both react to what comes forward or what comes their way here in the coming weeks and the next few months. Moving on from there, we talked about the guys who are in the queue. Let's talk about the guys who are in the show, or at least who made their debuts in the show. And this is one of the few times, maybe the only time, guys, that I can ever remember, with the exception of the beginning of the regular season any given year, that three players from the queue have made their NHL debut within a week of each other. Now tonight, and we're going to talk a little bit less about this only because it's happening right now. We're recording on a Monday night, by the way, for everybody's information. And that is Samuel Bolduc, who is making his debut with the New York Islanders tonight. Bolduc played four seasons in the queue with Blainville and Sherbrooke, a couple trips to the, or one trip, I should say, to the President Cup final with the Armada back in 2018. But let's talk about the guys who've already gotten their debut fully out of the way. William Dufour, Jacob Pelche. Dufour debuted with the Islanders on Wednesday, pointless. He was a minus two. He had a giveaway in there, and he's since been reassigned to Bridgeport, where ironically he scored the overtime winner in his first game back. Then there's Jacob Peltier, whose debut has certainly gotten the lion's share of the headlines between those two players, and for some rather dubious reasons. So I'm going to leave it at that. Jamie, let's start off. You're the Sea Dogs guy, so to speak, not to pigeonhole you too much, but your thoughts on Dufour's call-up. It was a bit of a rocky start. Yeah. Thoughts on potentially getting back in the lineup there, and obviously, let's hear your thoughts on Pelche as well.
Yeah, it wasn't a night to remember for Dufour. Unfortunately, you know, kind of got off to an okay start, but you know the turnovers seemed to really push him into an awkward position and ultimately benched. I know there was some talk before the game that the call up was more around. They wanted to put this young guy on the top line to kind of send a message to some of the current Islanders to say, you need to step up your game or else we're going to call up this guy from the AHL to take your spot. And obviously they didn't stick to that for much of the game. I think it's probably good for Dufour if you want to look at a positive. You know, the big knock on him is always going to be his foot speed. And this is obviously a great experience because now he knows where he needs to be speed-wise. So I think... I expect him to probably continue to have a good season in the AHL. Maybe we'll see him up again here and there. But certainly I hope for him that his next appearance goes a little bit smoother. And yeah, this Pelche thing, really odd comments from Daryl Sutter. I don't even know what to make of them. I kind of wonder if it's just a bit of a message that was maybe misinterpreted by the media or not, and this is Sutter being Sutter, but I don't know, it was an unusual message for sure.
I think it was most other coaches in the league, I'd say it would leave more open for interpretation, but I don't necessarily think they would go that route. Personally, as somebody who believes that, you know, and it's true, you only get one first NHL game, was it really the time? Was it really the place? Took a little bit away for sure. Logan, what are your thoughts?
Well, firstly, the Sutter thing, I think it was a joke gone bad. I think, you know, he tries to play at the media a little bit. It's kind of his dry humor. I think it's what he tried to do, and it just, you know, obviously is a bit of a flop, right? I mean, yeah. Look, let's be honest. He knows who Jacob Pelche is. I mean, he's an NHL coach. How do you not, right? You know, so sometimes you look at it, and it's not the end of the world. I mean, let's be honest. When Claude Giroux got drafted, you know, Bobby Clarke forgot his name, right? And I think he turned out all right. So, you know, as for Dufour, I mean, yeah, tough scene. You're walking in against Boston, too. I mean, Jesus, you know, they're a wagon right now. You know, but, you know, hey, it's the NHL, man. You know what I mean? Like, these kids are young. I mean, you're walking the best league of the world, the best players, right? So, you know what? These guys will get their turn. They'll get their crack. And as they play more games, get more comfortable, they'll get their shot. And you know what? Good on the Islanders, though. You mentioned Bull Duke getting called up tonight, too. I mean, good on them. You know what I mean? Give their young prospects a sniff here and there. I think it's good for development. So Dufour is a good player, and you know what? He's going to have a good pro career wherever that may be. I actually coached against him in Bantam at the Monctonian, and him and his team absolutely embarrassed us for 9 goals. It was like we were, well, Bantam, so they're what, 13, 14? Honestly, it was like playing against 18-year-olds, and I remember him. It was ridiculous.
Wow.
It was we were good, and we had no business being in the same rank as them. But no surprise he's turned into the player that he is after what I saw many years ago from him.
Yeah, definitely. Brought it during the Memorial Cup as well, of course, back in June. 4-goal performance against Schwinnigan in the round robin. Really, you know, 7 goals in the tournament. Easy choice for MVP. He obviously looked like a pro player all throughout that last season in junior. And you know what? I'll echo your thoughts, Logan. You know, this is an Islanders team that's, you know, on the cusp of a playoff spot. They could address that in a lot of ways if they felt the need to change the momentum in some way. And to bring up these kids, that's I applaud it. It's something different. It as Jamie mentioned, it sends a message. And I think it does send the right message. If that's what it takes to get your regulars to maybe wake up a little bit more, or to show a little bit more commitment, you know, however you want to say it, you know what? There are far worse ways that you could approach it. Hey, you could sit before the media and ask the guy who just played his first NHL game what number he wears, for example. You know, that's always another option that you can take, and the Islanders like to go the other way.
Sutter's really entertaining, though. I enjoy his dry wit. I think, you know, again, with all this stuff, you know, players get called up or sent down. I mean, the thing is, we only see what we see and know what we know, right? We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. I mean, that Islanders room, you know what? They could have a bunch of players that are just not getting along with anybody or not getting along with the coaches, being rude, being ignorant. Who knows, right? Like, we don't, you know. So, I mean, these teams, they operate with intent, you know, and knowledge, and there's a method to their madness, right? I mean, and now, too, in salary cap era, like, there's such a business to everything now, too. I mean, you know, they're looking at it going, okay, what's our situation for next year? Like, do we got to move money out? Can we bring money in? You know, and I always, you know, believe, too, right now, like, everyone loves a good, cheap player, you know, and guys on entry-level deals, like, hey, if we can get a guy for less than $1 million on a cap hit and he could play – get them up here. You know what I mean?
That cap's not going up.
Young guys, it's like, hey, bring them up. Let's give them a skate for a game or two or three. And if they can do it, geez, we'll roster them next year. Cause I mean, it's cheaper than paying a guy $3.5 million, you know? Mm-hmm. So that's just a big part of it too. Like, you look at these kids, I mean, they're getting, you know, more of a shot now than ever because they're cheap, cause they're on entry level deals. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's a lot of that to play too. And, you know, you want to show your American League team too a little faith from the big club, right? Guys in the American League that are under two-way deals, they want to know, like, hey, oh yeah, like, there's Dufour getting called up. Maybe I'll be next. You know what I mean? Like, you got to keep that fire going. I mean, there's nothing worse than seeing guys in two-way deals get buried in the minors and never, ever get a chance, right? So, you know, I think the Islanders, you know, what they're doing, I mean, hey, if you're good enough, you can afford to have a young guy in the lineup for a game, really.
Exactly. And if you have, you know, if you're the general manager, if you have enough faith in your coach, then you have enough faith in him to manage the bench and manage the game, no matter who's in the lineup within reason. And, you know, that it's definitely a credit to the Islanders. So speaking of coaches, we talked about our old buddy Daryl for a little while. Let's talk about a couple of other coaches, a couple of guys in the queue, actually. And let's talk about them for some pretty different reasons. We're going to start off in St. John. Travis Crickard, of course, is the head coach down there, taking over from Gardner McDougall and his illustrious, six-game career with the Sea Dogs. Hey, good national title out of it, though. Hey, can't complain. But Travis, you know, he takes a little bit of a different approach, I think it's safe to say, than Gardner, and probably none better illustrated than what happened last week. And I'll just read this verbatim. Jamie, you brought this to my attention. I'm surprised it didn't get a little more attention in the general hockey world. Mm-hmm. So wondering where Sea Dogs coach Travis Crickard was for the first period of Wednesday's 4-1 loss to Shawinigan. He was sitting a self-imposed one-period penalty for a late decision in an 8-3 victory over Rimouski the previous Saturday. In that game, Crickard called a timeout with 3:15 remaining and the Dogs up by 7 goals to work on a face-off play that needed some specific live game practice. However, Rimouski coach Serge Beausoleil objected strongly to the move, roaring across the ice at the Sea Dogs bench in a heated manner. Upon further reflection, Crickard said the reality of the situation was that he was working on a face-off play for a team with just 14 wins. But the perception may have been that he was being disrespectful to Rimouski with the move, and that he should have been, quote-unquote, more humble in the specific situation. I have remained very committed that if anyone does not uphold our team values, they sit, he explained of his 20-minute absence. I did not, so I sat a period. I wasn't being humble. So before I go to you, Jamie, I'll just give you my I'll come back to myself on this. But my initial reaction when I read this after you sent this to me, Jamie, was, what? Huh? You really did that, eh? And of course, it happened to me this way.
I'm really excited to hear what you have to say.
So
be honest.
Tozer, you're up.
Well,
be as honest as you can.
Yes.
Did this come from you? Are you the one that confirmed this story?
No, this is full credit to Kevin Barrett from Post Media, by the way, for the story. And I think that's
why I'm shocked that this hasn't made the rounds yet. Yep. To be honest. Sorry to interrupt.
Agreed.
Really sorry. To
Post Media's paywall. there you go. I was watching this game live and I was puzzled why Crickard took this timeout. Obviously, it was 8-1. And to do this, I actually thought that, okay, this has to be some sort of revenge tactic for something that happened in the playoffs between St. John and Rimouski last year. So I just assumed it was something weird like that. And of course, Crickard after the game was asked about it. And of course, he said it was a face-off play, which I feel like we've heard dozens of times from Q coaches over the years who make a similar timeout play like this. This self-imposed timeout was very bizarre. I've honestly never seen that at the junior level. I guess I like the message it's sending. And Crickard, full credit to him, he has been a coach this season that has enforced rules like this. There have been a few games where the Sea Dogs have been dealt with some pretty heavy blows on the back end with injuries. And the Sea Dogs have healthy scratch defensemen, even though they're dealing with those injuries for various reasons. So Crickard is really set and sticking to his guns, and he's really setting a culture for this team. I guess I like it. It's definitely an odd move, but I like the message it sends, and I think it's probably a good thing for a young team that's going to be together for the next couple of years.
Logan?
There's two parts to this, and we'll start with the first one. Calling that timeout is absolutely egregious. At any level. I mean, Serge Beausoleil's coached in that league a very long time. I'm not surprised he lost his mind. Anyone would. I mean, that just would send any coach in an absolute frenzy. I get it. It's a coachable moment. I understand that. But you kind of have to look at your situation, your surroundings, and be like, okay, it is what it is. Calling a timeout was outrageous. Grab a whiteboard, scribble something up, be done with it, right? game's out of hand at that point. So there's that part of it. The self-imposed sitting of himself, I don't know Travis. I'd never met him. I feel bad. Maybe hopefully someday I could meet him and actually talk to him about this.
He may not want to meet you, depending on what you're about to do.
Yeah, no, it's just true. I understand the message you're sending to your group, right? Like, he obviously is trying to be a role model and lead by example and hold himself accountable to the same standards he's holding his players to. I get that. I respect that. I don't think sitting yourself for a first period, though, accomplishes that. I think, you know what, if you go in the room afterwards, after the game or next day of practice, and say to your group, like, hey, listen, guys, you know what I did was shouldn't have done it, and then here's why, the players would have been like, okay, you know what I mean? And they get it and they understand. I think you would have achieved the same result. Sitting yourself for a period, I've never seen or heard of anything like that before. That's definitely a move. I don't know if it's been done but I mean, for him, I mean, obviously he's passionate about what he's doing and he's trying to do the right things with that group and send the right messages to the players. And hopefully all this achieved that. I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world. Hopefully him and Serge Bosley had a conversation with each other too. I mean, Serge is a very well respected guy around the league. One thing I'd be curious of is if those players in that moment, when that timeout was called, if the players recognized what was going on. You know, sometimes you wonder if these players to kind of, you know, pay attention to that. But honestly, when I read about this earlier, I didn't know this happened. I talked to some people I know around here that are involved with the league, and I said, do you guys know about that? And they didn't know either. And they were equally quite as shocked. And that's why I mentioned, I'm surprised this actually hasn't gotten more traction around social media. Cause it's a pretty crazy story actually.
Yeah. I've never heard of something like this. I mean, obviously we've heard of the timeout thing, and I guess my two cents on it is, first of all, and I'm not saying this to glorify the way it was, you know, we're not sitting around the lemon tree.
Oh, that'd be a line brawl. 15, 20 years ago, that'd be a line brawl.
I'm not going to sit here with an onion tied to my belt telling about the way it was. But now we all know if this was 20 years ago, and I remember this exact same scenario, one in particular, actually playing out, and it was about 25 years ago, and it was the Moncton Wildcats and the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles. Screaming Eagles were in their second year in Cape Breton. They were a terrible team, to be brutally honest, and the Cats were up 8-1. And with about a minute or so to go, Rael Paymont called a timeout. And the head coach of the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles at the time was a guy by the name of Bruce Campbell. And he just came out in the media after the game and said, the next time that team comes to Cape Breton, don't be surprised if a guy like, and just to give you some ideas, their star players back then were guys like Sebastian Roger, Simon Liliberté, and he named them. He basically all but put a bounty on the head of these two kids, saying, you know what, don't be surprised if guys like Roger and Liliberté leave hurt. And nothing was done about it. Like, if that had happened,
can't say that anymore.
You can't. It's you can't do that anymore. You would be probably on CNN if you did that nowadays. But back then, it was, you know, quite frankly, for what the landscape of the league and what the landscape of hockey was back then, people just sort of looked at each other and just sort of nodded their heads. What would happen.
The thing that shocked me with the timeout, like I said, it's got kind of like two different things here. Like, I think with the timeout, I mean, you know, Crickard's he's an experienced coach. Like, he's coached before. Like, I just look at him like, you should know better. Yep. You know, that's what kind of got me about that. It's like, you know better. I mean, that's almost like like I said, in Bantam hockey, we would run in a situation. Like, we would never do things like that in those situations. You know, like, you just kind of, it's kind of like this thing you just know. I don't know. It's pretty crazy. It's pretty wild. I just, you know, and sitting himself for the first. It's a crazy story, honestly. And I didn't see it. Yeah. I didn't see the tape of it. I'd like to see the tape of it, actually, just to witness the reaction of everybody at the rink.
Yeah, and if there wasn't a line brawl after that, but if you go and look at the box score, you can tell that the game took a significant turn after that, and it got pretty 100%, nasty, which you can definitely understand.
Yeah.
But like I completely agree with you, Logan. Like, that's why I kind of wonder if there's just something going on in a previous game or in that playoff series last year, and this is just some odd revenge tactic.
Cover of some sort.
Yeah, and I like, you've seen that in, like, you know, gamesmanship in that regard, you know, a little bit of hate on for the other guy. And, and you know, I saw that in the Scotiabank Center just a couple years back. Not similar, but, like, it was, you know, team was up pretty high on the other one, and first power play units going out there, and you're kind of like, okay, really? You know, but it was a – but, yeah, I mean, the timeout, man, that's aggressive. Like, that's, you know, throwing out the first power play unit, that's one thing. That's, you know, bad enough. But, like, calling the timeout, man, that's swinging for the fences. Like, that's – yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, too, just to cap this off quickly, yes, he Travis gave himself the self-imposed timeout. But the other thing that struck me about this, and, you know, at the end of the day, the Sea Dogs are probably doing a little bit better in the standings than anybody expected this year. You know, he mentioned the 14 wins thing. Well, if this was March and he had 14 wins, okay, I can get it. Well, it's still only January. And if anybody checked the standings lately, you know, they're, you know, this isn't obviously not a go for it year, but it's certain the team is probably a little bit more contentious than people would have expected. And this is a game against Shawinigan. This is for the Sea Dogs a bit of a more winnable game, in which he took the period off. You know, he took the period off against Shawinigan. If I'm Travis Crickard for that game, be that guy and make that kind of comment. But quite frankly, if this is a game against the Mooseheads, and of course they played them back to back over the weekend, and I want to pull this maneuver, maybe I pull it then. A game against Shawinigan, in which, you know, a couple points is not outside the realm of possibility. Do you really want to remove yourself from the bench in a game like this? I mean, this team, you know, is still playing for pride. They're still playing for wins. I don't know. There's something about the timing of that element of things that kind of struck me as a bit odd as well.
Well, I almost question is, like, did the GM have something to do with it too, right? Because, I mean, one, if I'm a coach and I say to my GM, hey, I'm going to sit myself for first period and here's why, I mean, I kind of feel like the GM would be like, no. You're paid to do a job. You'll go out there and do that job, right? So part of I don't know. It's Jamie, you're the St. John guy. You got to get to the bottom of this. That's your task this week. You got to do your thing, man. And circle sounds back good. With us. Let us
know. It's going to be on the missive next week, Tozer. Like, I look forward to a follow up.
All right,
you got a job here, man.
And quickly, we'll touch a little bit quickly on this one. Patrick Waugh, who I'd be curious to see what his reaction would have been. Serge Beausoleil was one thing. I think Patty might have been a little more animated, just going out on a limb there. Yeah. But yes, and you know, he's in the news for a lot of different reasons. Fastest coach to 500 wins in QMJHL history. Only took him 815 games. He's the sixth coach to reach this milestone, and obviously, in his two stints with the Rampart, he has consistently had very strong teams with which to guide. But you know what? At the end of the day, not everybody can step behind the bench. He does so, and he's gotten the results. But my question to both of you, and I'll start with Logan on this one. What do you think, when it's all said and done, will be his legacy to this league in general? And as well, what do you think will be the tipping point that'll cause him to potentially move on again?
Well, I think what will cause him to move on is retirement, honestly. Mm-hmm. And second, and I'll get to that in a second. As for his legacy, I mean, look, listen, he's arguably one of the most colorful personalities to come through junior hockey in the Quebec Major Junior League ever. His hockey playing career speaks for itself. I mean, that's self-explanatory. And, you know, here's a guy who's a hockey Hall of Famer and decides to go back to the junior hockey level and, you know, be a part owner of a team and run a team and manage a team and coach a team. And I think, you know, his legacy will live on. I mean, he'll go down as one of the all-time greats of the Q. I mean, it's just, you know, we can say what we want about him and his personality, but listen, like I know kids that have played for him and they rave about his coaching. I think, in my opinion, Patrick Waugh is a junior hockey coach. I think, you know, when he was in the NHL, a short stint there, Patrick Waugh's the kind of guy, like, he needs to be coach and GM, right? Like, because he can build teams to what he wants to coach. And I think just a coach for him doesn't fit. Someone else that reminds me of that, Jim Holton, same thing, coach, GM, right? You can, hey, I know the kind of player I want to coach. I know the kind of team I want to build. I can go do that because I play both roles, right? Where Patrick Waugh is, same thing. His antics are, they're entertaining. I mean, he still whistles for line changes, which I think is absolutely hilarious. His players like trained dogs. As soon as they hear that whistle, boom, they're off the ice. I think it's incredible. But you know what? I mean, yeah, you look at that win record. I mean, yeah, he's been able to build himself good teams, but so have a lot of other coaches in this league. I mean, he's cranking out a 750 win percentage. I mean, that's no joke, man. Like, that's awesome. And he's coaching in a big market too, right? Comes a lot of pressure with that and stigma and stuff. So,
He's doing it in an 18-team league as well.
There's
plenty of competition year in, year out.
I think for him, you know what? I mean, listen, if he wanted to go pro, he could go pro any day. He could pick up a phone and be like, hey, he could get on the staff in any one of those teams in the league. No problem. You know, really, let's be honest. You think he can get an assistant coaching job in the NHL tomorrow? Of course he could, right? But I think for him, you know, he loves junior hockey. I mean, you look at Mark Hunter in London, like, same thing. They love junior hockey. That's what they wanted to do. And I think Patrick Waugh is that kind of guy.
So, Jamie, basically the same thing. And I'll actually throw this in as well. I mean, you, like the rest of us, you know, we've watched Patrick Waugh behind the bench for years. There's been a ton of success there. Won the Memorial Cup in his first year behind the bench, had never coached really before outside of maybe his kids, like, you know, minor hockey teams or something like that. For you, anything particularly that stands out about the coaching career of Patrick Waugh?
Oh, definitely. It definitely his personality and his character. And I think his ability to, you know, really push the league too. I think, you know, not a lot of coaches, not a lot of GMs or presidents, you know, talk publicly and criticize the league much anymore. So I think his ability to kind of use the media to kind of make changes and improve the league overall is
that's an excellent point.
Yeah, it's something that you don't see a lot of anymore. Really good point. Him leaving the league, if he does leave, that's a big loss for everyone. And I'm fascinated by this debate about how it seems like this is his last season, even though there's, you know, no hard evidence to indicate that it is his last season. But I really don't know, like, what he's going to do afterwards. Like, I can't really see him anywhere else, honestly. The only really thing that I can think of is maybe there is some role trying to get the NHL to Quebec City that he wants to be involved in. Maybe that's an opportunity for him. But and one last thing I'll talk on quickly is his legacy to me in terms of wins is so interesting, just because such a great regular season record, quite a bit of playoff success, but no league championships is just, it's so fascinating to me.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, he'll be remembered for a lot of different reasons. And the thing that I'll always think about with Patrick Waugh is one quote that he mentioned his first game back in Moncton after the 2006 Memorial Cup. They're going to boo me like crazy when I'm on the bench, and then they're going to ask for my autograph after the game. And if that doesn't sum up everything about Patrick Waugh, then I don't know what does. We're going to take a quick dive into the mailbag. We got one here from David Williams via Twitter. It's short, it's sweet, and we're going to go about it. It should command a fairly short and sweet answer. And Logan, I'm going to go to you on this one first because you have the coaching perspective. Simply put, how do coaches select which three players shoot in a shootout?
Goal, score, man. When it comes down to it, you can look at it and overanalyze it any which way you want and this and that. But the other day, goal, score, right? And I mean, and that's it. Listen, I've seen stuff. I've seen coaches have shootout competitions in practice. Like, hey, whoever the top three guys are, we'll use you for the next week and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, I mean, I've also seen coaches that do, you know, the pre-scout reports and the or pre-scouting reports on the opposing goalie. Oh, well, you know, he catches left, so let's get a right-hand shot. But at the end of the day, honestly, goal scorers score. And I think, you know, when it gets the top three are easy to pick. It's after that. That's where it gets hard, in my opinion. Top three, that's easy. You always get your three best guys, whatever. But after that is when it gets difficult.
And Jamie, same idea.
Yeah, I definitely go with the top offensive guys right off the bat. And I actually love it when there's someone off the board comes over the boards to shoot. And, you know, there's clearly something they did in practice or showed in the game that they think is going to lead to a goal. And Vincent Deipont, for example, at the World Juniors, the defenseman, mm-hmm. shot for Switzerland, didn't play a second the entire game, but shot in the shootout.
Yep.
Yeah,
Moncton right. Wildcats had a guy like that about 15 years ago. His name is Ted Stevens. He was a decent offensive player, but he guaranteed he was one of the top three guys over the boards, and he wasn't the first guy you'd think of for just that reason.
And let's actually, this is going to be a good segue. And everyone watching at home, this will go into the whole NHL Team of the Week segment that I know you're excited to get to. Merrick Malik, do you remember his shootout goal, the New York Rangers?
Yep. Between the legs? Yeah, like absolutely.
Five goals
back when everybody was excited about the shootout. Yeah. It was
that's
only
right,
a few weeks
the first
old. Year
back the shootout, he went back between, yeah. and he was like the 13th shooter, something outrageous.
Yep.
And yeah, definitely. Between the legs for a guy who defenseman who never scores goals, and yeah, it's probably one of the most iconic shootout goals just because of the circumstance. But anyway,
salutes the crowd at MSG and everything. Yeah. And speaking of MSG, thank you, Mr. Delaney. We got to have you back now because that will bring us to the NHL Team of the Week, and that's the New York Rangers. There's one guy drafted in the queue right now who is Rangers property. He is rare in that he is one of the few Russian players in the CHL this year. Max Barbashev, a guy who basically committed full bore to staying in junior, talked to his GM in Moncton, Richie Thibault. This guy basically went 18 months at one point without going home between COVID and everything else that's taken place. He's committed to being in Moncton. He's committed to being a solid prospect for the Rangers. And quite frankly, he is a difference maker in that Wildcat lineup. Jamie, I want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, and you know, Barbashev, I thought he had a bit of an, I don't know if underwhelming is the right word, first half, but I don't think it was really the first half the Wildcats had hoped from him. And they're a team that's not, you know, hugely offensively gifted. So I think they kind of needed a lot more from him, but he's really turned it on the past month or so. So I think he's kind of found his groove, and that's great for the Wildcats because they definitely need all the offense they can get from their top guys.
Logan?
Yeah. I know Barbashev, when he came here, there was a lot of hype around him for, you know, being an import pick and stuff like that. And I think he might be a guy that kind of got robbed from COVID a little bit. You know, first year over here, that season was basically thrown in the garbage can, right? And I think it kind of might have, you know, affected things. Even last season, there was still a bit of a hangover effect from that. So I don't really know if he's found his legs yet. I know that sounds a little weird being his third year in the league, but really he's been in the league, let's be honest, like a year and a half. You know, mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. I think the seal, there's a higher ceiling than what we might think. You know, he might be the kind of guy like play his years out in junior and all of a sudden, you know, who'll go out in the American League and hey, you know, the world's his and things move on. Right. I mean, you know, 19 mm-hmm. years old now, be a 20 next year. I'm assuming Moncton would keep him as a 20. I think maybe they don't. Yeah. I don't know. But I agree with you, Jamie. I think there's more there than what we've seen so far.
Yeah. And definitely a guy who plays a style that you would think would translate to a pro game. Mm-hmm. You know, he'll go to the dirty areas. He's a little bit physical. He's not quite on the same level, if we're being totally honest, as his brother Ivan, who also played in Moncton. Of course, he's now with the St. Louis Blues, but, you know, certainly a solid prospect in his own right. We'll just quickly mention as well the AHL guys who are with the Hartford Wolfpack, Ben Tardif, a President Cup winner in Victoriaville, and the king of spicy pork, Louis Domingue, goaltender, who spent 4 years in Moncton and Quebec, respectively. And of course, the NHL. If you want to talk about Rangers in the queue, you want to go to the NHL, and you go over that laundry list of guys who span all sorts of eras in the queue between Yaro Halak, who was an old Lewiston maniac, rest in peace, goaltender, all the way up to, of course, number one overall pick, Alexi Lafreniere, who's grabbing a lot of headlines, for better or worse, in Manhattan this year, and of course the coaches Jarrett Glant, Mike Kelly, and Jim Midgley. And I know Logan, you know Midge a fair amount yourself, and to see him get that opportunity, I'm sure it must make you as happy as it makes all of us.
Yeah, I mean Midge is, listen, you, I can assure you, like, you won't find anybody to ever speak a bad word about that man. You could try, you won't. And what an awesome story, man. I mean, that guy grinded it out. Like, he grinded it out for a long time coaching. I mean, he did it all. And Midge, one thing I can say about him is he's not above anything, like, at all.
Right.
You know, he'll come out, run a minor hockey practice, man. Like, he is not above anything. And, you know, he the reason why he got to the NHL is because of that. You know, his reputation preceded him. Like, I was told the story that when Gerard Gallant and Mike Kelly were looking for that other guy, they were, you know, throwing names around, and the one name they kept coming back to was Mitch. And, you know, it's because of his reputation, right? Because he's a nice guy and just a dedicated hockey person too. And yeah, it's really awesome. I mean, he's kind of, you know, he's from Ontario, but he did live in Cole Harbour for a long time. So he's kind of like, he's like adopted Cole Harbour guy, you know?
Right, right.
But yeah.
And I think Gerard and Mike Kelly both see a little bit of themselves in a guy like Midge anyway.
Just, oh, yeah.
The way that they all carry about their business, very, very similar. You probably not meet as a guy as salt of the earth as a guy like Gerard Glant or Mike Kelly or Jim Midgley. So great to see them turning it around a little bit as of late in New York, and hopefully we see more of that to come. And we're going to cap off things as usual with our draft prospect of the week. Went with somebody who actually spent a little time in the Maritimes this past week. That's Chicoutimi Saguenay Center, Andre Lashko. He made the jump onto the list. He was not on the first players to watch list by the NHL back in the fall, and for good reason. He's ranked 104th amongst North American skaters for the 2023 NHL draft, and he has been on a tear as of late. Jamie, tell me what you think about Andre Lashko.
Yeah, definitely some pretty good numbers for an 18-year-old known for really creative offensive instincts, and has a really good shot too, which we're seeing in his offense production. Really turning it on of late, which is great, given that the draft's right around the corner. Had 8 goals and 11 assists just in the month of January. Not the biggest guy. I think he's around 170, but he's put on quite a bit of weight over the past year. And I think he's probably going to be quite a contributor for the Sags next season, assuming he comes back. Him being Belarusian, though, I'm sure that's probably going to impact his draft stock a little bit, just given the uncertainties there.
And Logan, your thoughts quickly on Lashko and the way he's kind of turned things up once the calendar turned to 2023.
I mean, he's presented with a good opportunity, and he's making the most of it. Chicoutimi, you know, they, no question, they're in a rebuild mode. They've unloaded a lot of pieces last year and got rid of a couple more this year. And, you know, on paper, they're not the strongest team by far. And what's impressed me about him is he's taking that and running with it. He's getting more ice time, more special teams. But they're also playing against really good teams, you know, a lot, right? They have a tougher schedule being on that conference. And he's a guy who's just getting better and better every game, make the most of opportunities. So I full marks to it.
Yeah, he definitely stands as good a chance as anybody to be a strong part of some organization's future. Speaking of the future, Logan Delaney, we want to see you back here at some point in the future as well. This has been a pleasure. You know, you brought it just to, you know, we don't just invite anybody to this thing. You know, this is only the cream of the crop make it to THN on the queue. Mm-hmm. And we want to thank you for taking the time to be with us.
So no, thank you both for having me. And listen, I never met a microphone I didn't like, so I'd be more than happy to take you up on your offer. And it's great to finally meet you, Jamie. I only know you from Twitter, so it's nice to actually put a face to it. But no, it's a lot of fun, guys. Thanks a lot for having me.
Excellent. And Jamie, of course, thanks as well for showing up every week and putting up with all that you do. That's great. And thanks again to Connor Somerville, who's ripping his hair out behind the scenes and getting us to wrap this up by the 50-minute mark. So for all of these guys, I'm Will McLaren saying thank you for watching. We'll be back next week with more news from the queue.